with the life of David. And last week we covered the first 11 verses, and if you'll remember, we spent a decent amount of time at the beginning. I was trying to relay kind of a picture to all of you to help you as you read and as you study and as we go through together. And what we talked about for a good bit was the idea of a lower story and an upper story. The idea of where we see what is going on the human level, right? We have the facts of the story that is being given to us. But along with that, we see the upper story, or the behind-the-scenes story, if you will. We see what God is doing. And we talked about how, you know, in the New Testament, a lot of times that's more plain when it comes to the stories, when it comes to the narratives. You see Jesus is there, so you don't have to figure, you know, on a whole lot. There's Jesus. What he says is right and true and good, and his disciples follow him. And so we can very easily put ourselves in the shoes of the disciples and kind of turn the mirror on ourselves. We can look to the example of Jesus Christ. And when we get to the Old Testament, it becomes a little bit more difficult. It becomes a little less plain. Thank God, oftentimes we see specifically God moving, or the Lord says this, or you know, the narration comes in to give us you know, definitive truth about what is being given to us. And we talked about the idea of recognizing as believers, and I want to kind of keep us in mind of this, recognizing as believers in Christ, the champion, if you will, of our stories is not ourselves. It's Jesus Christ. All right, we talked about anytime we watch a hero movie or a chosen one type trope movie or read that kind of book, we are always prone, we're always tempted to think ourselves the protagonist, right? We're the hero. We're the one who's going to step up and do. We're never, you know, in the group of bad guys doing the bad stuff. You know, we're never in the group of nobodies doing the, you know, doing the nothing stuff. We always think we're the hero, and we're ready to, you know, and oftentimes, sadly, the Word of God is preached that way. David was a hero. You need to be a hero too, right? And so I hope this is beneficial to us to look and see, while yes, David does set a good example for us, we can look at the upper story and we can see that there is considerably more going on. So again, because I see some new faces and I want to kind of put us in context of all this, in verses 1 through 11, and most of you know the story of David and Goliath. It's one of the most popular stories, so I don't want to stand on that too much. We want to read through it. But what we looked at last week, we've got the two armies, if you will. The two armies are standing on either side of the valley, and we talked about it. It's a tactical disadvantage to move into the valley. We have Goliath who comes out. He's literally a giant of a man. He's 9 foot tall. You know, we know some people that are like, that's a giant of a man. No, this is actually a giant of a man. This is a 9 foot tall man. We talked about the weight of his armor and all that things, and he sets out a challenge against Saul and his armies. You send one man to me, and if he defeats me, we will serve you. But if I defeat him, then you must serve us. And we talked about the reality that we are born into a battlefield. This world is a battlefield. The moment that Adam sinned and ate the fruit of the tree of knowledge and good and evil, this world was thrown into chaos. This world was thrown into a battle. God comes and pronounces to the woman, the serpent, that's that other side of the battle, will bruise his heel, and he shall bruise his head. So the enemies of God are encamped against the people of God. There is an unbeatable foe that stands before us, covered in bronze, right? The judgment of our sin that stands against us, and we cannot overcome that. There's nothing we can do to defeat that. And so we left last week in verse 11. Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine. They were dismayed and greatly afraid. And the reality of all men face fear and guilt because of their sin, and fear because of the reality of death. And so there Goliath stands in verse 11 with all of Israel and Saul dismayed. And then, like, as we close last week, verse 12 is where we'll start reading. We'll read through verse 30. It says, "Now David was the son of that Ephratite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and who had 8 sons. And the man was old, advanced in years, in the days of Saul. The three oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to the battle. The names of his three sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the third Shema. And David was the youngest, and the three oldest followed Saul. But David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. Then Jesse said to his son, "Take now your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves and run to your brothers at the camp and carry the 10 cheeses to the captain of their thousand and see your brothers fare and bring back news of them." Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. So David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, and took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him, and came to the camp as the army was going out to fight and shouting for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in a battle array, army against army. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines. And he spoke according to the same words, so David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadly afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches and give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel." Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" The people answered him in this manner, saying, "So it shall be done for the man who kills him." Now Eliab, his oldest brother, when he spoke to the men, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and he said, "Why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done now? Is there not a cause?" Then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing, and these people answered him as the first ones did. So we've got this battle story, and we kind of walked into this a little bit last week, but we've got this battle story, we've got this champion who comes out, we've got Israel who is afraid and defeated, we have this picture of the king, he is in fright of this giant that has come out, he can't take his men down into the valley, he doesn't have a champion to send out against him. And then we find ourselves, strangely, in small town Bethlehem. As I said last week, the movie kind of pans, the picture of the camera just kind of jumps over, and we're far away there in Bethlehem. It's a strange thing to move from the war front to this small rural shepherd and his father, right? How do these two correlate? What things are going on here? And you may think, okay, well, we've got this battle scene, and now we're over here. This clearly doesn't have anything to do with the other. But in hindsight, we know, right? Reality. God is turning the camera onto his champion. He's going to take David. He's going to take this shepherd boy, this young boy, this one who is the youngest of eight, while the three eldest are in battle. He's the youngest. He's the one that's running errands for dad. And taking care of the sheep. So God is introducing his champion. We saw in 1 Samuel 16, just in the last chapter, verse 1, God tells Samuel, "I have found my man," right? And so now in the course of time, in the course of the chronology of the telling of the story of David and Goliath, God is introducing his champion. So we see David there with Jesse back home. And his dad tells him, "Hey, I need you to leave the sheep and take care of, take this food to your brothers and tell me how they're doing. Go down and visit them and see how they're doing. Take them some bread, take them some goods. I want to hear the news of how things are going on." And we read that David has someone to take care of his sheep. There's a lot of interesting questions that kind of pop up as you're reading through this. At least it does for me. I'm reading through it. I'm like, why is Samuel so detailed with exactly how many breads and cheeses David is taking? Why is Samuel so detailed with the fact that David is a keeper of sheep and he leaves someone to keep his sheep, and then when he's on the battlefront, the question is asked, hey, Who's keeping your sheep anyway, right? It's pointing repeatedly, and we'll see it again in the next section, which I know I'm probably not going to get to tonight, but we'll see it again in the next section. It is repeatedly pointing out the shepherd mentality or the shepherd position of David. He's a shepherd. That's what he does. That's his job. That's his priority, is to keep and to shepherd the sheep. Now, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but in the next section, what you're going to see as David goes down to meet Goliath, I know you probably didn't know he was going to do that later, but when he goes down to meet Goliath, three times in that one verse, he's talked about as a shepherd. He takes his shepherd's staff, he takes his shepherd bag, all right, and he takes his sling. And so it's repeatedly pointing us to David as the shepherd, pointing us to David as the shepherd. And Jesus comes and Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. And the shepherd gives his life for the sheep. So David takes care of his responsibility, and he obeys his father's request. David is sent, and he's obedient, taking care of his responsibility. He's obedient to the father, and he goes down to visit his brethren. When you start to read through this, you start to see the typology of David as a type of Christ. You cannot help but see how Jesus Christ took on flesh and became human, right? Brethren. And came and visited us and brought all kinds of blessings and all kinds of offerings down to find us there in the battlefield. So he comes down and he finds what is called as a battle. It says in verse 19, they were in the valley of Elah fighting the Philistines. But they aren't really fighting, are they? There's not a lot of fighting going on. They even give a battle shout in verse 17, right? They're shouting for the battle. But there's no real battle going on. There's nobody to go and fight. There's nobody to go and contend. So he comes and he finds them just kind of standing. It's interesting. I try to do a lot of listening and a lot of reading when I'm preparing, to preach a text or to go through, going through the life of David like this. It was so interesting to me how many, not all, but how many preachers pointed to these Israelites saying, look at them, they're not moving, they're not going forward, they're not going to battle. My question is, should they be going to battle? If the Spirit's not with them, if the Lord's not moving them, should they be going to battle, or should they be doing exactly what they're doing, which is standing on that hill? They're doing what they've been called to do. The Spirit of the Lord is not on Saul anymore, right? We talked about that last week. If we're going to match might for might, we're going to take King Saul. He's a head taller than everybody else, but sorry, his might doesn't match the might of Goliath. And so they're what are they to do? I think there's room here to give credence to them being willing to stand on their hill and not run away, being willing to stand there and hold their ground, not moving without the leading of the Spirit down into the valley, not moving in a senseless manner down into the valley to be destroyed. They're standing there on the hill. I felt like that was worth mentioning. So I think it's helpful and beneficial for us to realize and to recognize, if the Spirit of the Lord doesn't move us forward, then sometimes we may need to wait. We are a busy people. We are a busy, busy people. And sometimes waiting on the Lord is the last thing we want to do. It's they who wait on the Lord that will renew their strength. It's they that wait on the Lord that will mount up with wings as eagles. It's those who wait on the Lord that shall run and not grow weary, and that shall walk and not faint. But sometimes waiting on the Lord is one of the hardest things to do. I know how men think. None of us men want to be the guy standing there going, I don't know what to do. I can't do anything. I just have to stand here and hope somebody comes rescues me from this. None of us want to be in that position. But I think that's where the Israelites find themselves, unable to do anything. But God has a design, right? God is bringing their champion along. And through the course of time, David does come. So we see they're standing on the side. David does show up. It's interesting that it points out, and David heard him. He goes and verse 23, Goliath comes out and says, gives his spiel again. Verse 23, and David heard him. And all the men still, verse 24, they're dreadfully afraid, as they ought to be. So the men of Israel said, "Do you see this man who has come up?" Well, of course you've seen the man that's come up. That's not the question. Everybody sees the man that's come up. The question is, you see this guy? Well, here's what I want to tell you. It's whoever can go down and defeat him, there's great riches promised to that individual. There's a bride promised to the individual that can go and defeat him. The man that goes and defeat him, he doesn't have to pay taxes anymore. That's good enough right there, right? We don't pay taxes anymore, that'd be great. We'd all be, I don't know how much richer. I'm not even going to go into percentages. None of us want to talk about it. Yeah, whatever it is, right? No taxes, all kinds of wealth, and given a bride. Does it really matter how great the reward is if you're incapable of completing the task? Right? Does this somehow draw up a great strength out of someone? Oh, have you heard how great the reward is? Now I'm able to go and fight. Does it make you able to go and fight? It's interesting, some of the promises, the riches. I have, you could go in so many different places. I have it marked in Philippians 2 and verse 8 and 9. Being Jesus Christ, being found in appearance of a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. Therefore, God also has highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of those in earth and those in heaven and those of earth and those under the earth, that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. My mind always runs to Revelation 5:9. Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive honor and glory. We can't stand up and defeat sin and death on behalf of all men and receive all the riches of promise from God. Jesus Christ did, and Jesus Christ is due all the riches and promises of God. And oddly, strangely enough, we are the bride of Christ. We become then that bride. So David hears this, the talk of rewards and victory. And notice David's concern, going back, 1 Samuel chapter 17. They say, "Have you seen this man?" And David says, "What shall be done?" Like, "Are you? What did you say? Tell me again now. What shall be done?" Verse 26. And then he says, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Now David's not just throwing, I don't even know what the terms are these days. He's not throwing shade, or whatever. He's not just making fun of the guy. He's making a point. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine? This man is not of God. He has no covenant with God. Why do we fear this ungodly man? Right? Why do we fear this one? Does Christ not tell us, don't fear those who can take your life? Better fear the one who can take your life and your soul? Speaking of having an awesome reverence of God the Father. He said, why are we fearful of this ungodly man who is speaking threats? And not just that he's an ungodly man speaking threats, but he's an ungodly man speaking threats against the people of God. Why are we concerned for this? Why are we worried about that? That he should defy the armies of the living God. I believe that David's concern is for God's name. David's concern is for God's name. He's like, why is God's name being trampled here? Why does it look as though God is being defeated? When of course God is not to be defeated. And so David's brothers then, they hear him speaking like this. Why are we standing afraid of this man? Verse 28, his older brother, the oldest brother, his anger was aroused. He said, why did you come down here? What did you do with your sheep? And he's trying to belittle David. He's trying to mock him. Now, David, it would seem, is too young to be at war, right? So it's easy, right? If I'm, it's easy. People do it all the time. Let's take a basketball, for instance. People do this all the time. Oh, so-and-so is not as good as so-and-so, and so-and-so is not as good as so-and-so, and that guy's trash. He's no good. They're all better than you are, right? You understand what I'm saying? David comes down to the battlefield and is like, hey, why are you letting these guys talk to y'all like this? Was like, what are you going to do about it? And you're not going to do anything about it. You're not even big enough, old enough to be out here, going to battle. Why are you talking like this? So he says, why have you come down here? And he belittles him. He claims that he has pride and insolence in his heart. I have a couple of verses marked. John 1:11. John tells us that Jesus Christ came into his own, and his own did not receive him. John 4:44. Jesus himself testified that a prophet has no honor in his own country. In John 10:31, the Jews took up stones against Jesus. The Jews, his very brothers, took up stones against him. And Jesus says, "Many good works I have shown you from my Father. For which one of these works do you stone me?" That's basically David's answer. He's like, "Hey, why are you upset with me? What have I done to make you mad? Is there a cause for you to be upset with me? I'm asking a question here about why we're allowing this to go on." So then we see another turn. He turns back in verse 30. He says the same thing. The people answer him the same. This is what will be given to the one who kills Goliath. Verse 31. I think I've got time to get... Yeah, we got time for this. Verse 31 through verse 40 is where we'll conclude. "Now when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. Then David said to Saul, 'Let no man's heart fail because of him.'" Don't let anybody's heart fail or be afraid because of Goliath. "Your servant," speaking of himself, "will go and fight with this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against the Philistines to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it rose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God." "Moreover," David said, "the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with a coat of mail. And David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, "I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them." So David took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag and a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near the Philistine. So David goes in as he's really an unlikely candidate, all right, to put against Goliath. He's an unlikely candidate. He speaks encouragement and promises that he will defeat the giant on behalf of Israel. He said, "Don't let any man's heart fail. Don't let any man's heart be afraid." My mind went to Exodus chapter 14, 13, where Moses tells the children of Israel as they're standing on the edge of the Red Sea, "Do not be afraid. The Lord will fight for you." Right? Wait and see what the Lord is going to do. We are soldiers in the army of God. Right? We are soldiers in the army of God. We are told to put on the armor of God. We are told to take up our sword. We are told to take up our shield. We are told not to be entangling ourselves with the affairs of this world and affairs of this life. We are in an army. We are part of a battle. But you recognize this at your salvation, and I firmly believe you continue to recognize this through your entire Christian life. It is He who does the battling on your behalf. You do your best to stand firm. You do your best to walk behind Him. You do the best to be obedient to Him and to follow Him. But He is the one, if you want to go back to Sunday morning, He's the one who gives the increase. Right? We're called to obedience. We're called to faithfulness. We're called to do what He has called us to do. But He is the one that is going to make our path straight. He is the one who is going to protect us from the things seen and unseen. He is the one who is going to grow in us spiritually. All these things are of Him. And so David gives encouragement. Don't let man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight. God promises to fight for us. But of course, Saul rejects David's promise with eyes toward circumstance, right? This is sensible. This is reasonable. Saul goes, "Hey, you're too young. You can't do this. I think if we were there and we didn't know what was going on, we would all be like, yeah, let's not let this kid go out there, A, get killed, B, decide the fate of Israel. Are you with me on that? Yeah? Corey and Sean are about to the place where if there's something big and scary and hard, I'm about ready to go, yeah, you guys do it. Let dear old decrepit dad sit here. I'm about there, but I'm not going to send Jasper up. You know, I'm not going to do that. How often, though, do we, like Saul, Saul's got his eyes on the circumstances. How often do we get our eyes on the circumstances and forget the promises of God? We get our eyes looking around and go, this is not good. This is not how this is going to happen. This will never play out the good way, the right way, the best way. I don't know why God. I don't know where God, whatever your questions about God may be. We get our eyes on the circumstances. We forget the promises of God. So David begins to recount his acts to Saul. He says, hey, I've killed a lion and a bear. Anybody in here killed a lion and a bear? Anybody in here ever took a lion by its beard and punched him out? That's what it sounds like to me. Of course not. I mean, it's kind of like we hear this like, hey, yeah, he killed a lion and a bear. Oh, that's interesting. I guess that's what little boys used to do back in Israel. Does anybody want to just excuse that off? Like, that's what's going on here? I know I'm guilty of this. Sometimes I look at what God has done in the past and go, wow, what a coincidence that was. Okay, well, yeah, God did that, but I don't think he's going to do this. That's just not what God does. That's not how God does. I mean, yeah, I know he can, but I don't think he will. He just won't, because that's... And we belittle what God has done in the past to increase our fear and discourage our faith for what he's getting ready to do in our present and our future. I think it's good. I think it's helpful. It's beneficial that we remember back on all that God has done for us. Remember how God brought us through valleys and darknesses. Remember how God moved in ways that we didn't expect. Remember, try your best. Sometimes it's hard to remember the things that you used to be really worried about. Because God took care of them in your past memory, and you even forgot you was ever worried about it. And all those things ought to stack up to give you a pronounced right now faith of a God who can and is and will. So David tells him about all the things that he's done. So Paul, this is a different Saul. Don't be confused. Not the same Saul. So Saul says, okay, you've convinced me. Which, by the way, I don't want to miss this. Verse 37, moreover, David said. So David's like, hey, I killed a lion and a bear. And this guy who's defied the armies of the living God, he's going to be the same. Not because I'm great, but because he's defied the armies of the living God. And then there's like just silence. The whole room is going, really? You killed a lion and a bear, huh? And David said, well, moreover, the Lord delivered me. All the glory going to the Lord. All the glory going to God. Just like he delivered me from the lion and the bear, he'll deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said, go and the Lord be with you. But, in verse 38, Saul tries to clothe David with armor. We said it about Goliath coming out in bronze armor. I found it interesting. Saul tries to put David in an armor of bronze. Here, take my bronze helmet. What did Israel want from the Messiah? They wanted him to come and judge all the nations. They said, hey, put on this bronze helmet of judgment and judge all the nations on our behalf. And Jesus Christ says, this is not fitting for me now. Later, he'll come and carry out all those things. But when he came the first time, he didn't come as they wanted him to be. And he didn't come in judgment. So we have this comical verse. David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. You know, every one of us who have had children, we have put shoes on them in the store and say, now walk down the aisle and come back and tell me how you feel. Right? He's like, All right, David, let's get you suited up. Let's pull this belt real tight. That's a little big, but it'll be okay. All right, let's get the chin strap tight. That helmet's a little large, but all this is going to make you look good, you know? You put me in a suit that's three sizes too big. It don't make me look good. It makes me look even more like a little boy, right? And so there's David now. He's like, walk and test him. He says, I can't do this your way. I can't do this man's way. And as I said before, and we'll conclude here, verse 40, so he took his staff, put him in his shepherd's bag, and took his sling, and draws nearer to the Philistines. David goes out as a shepherd with his staff, his bag, and his sling. And you can imagine as David's going out there, it had to be more than one. At least one person said, he's going to die. He's going to die, and this is the end of Israel, and we're going to serve the Philistines forever. This is it. This is what's going to happen. The interesting thing about Jesus Christ is he goes out as a shepherd to defeat sin and death in the most curious way. He did that.